Yep, page 61 is a mind image of my mind, just a blank space. So we hopefully will have some stuff to fill it. And I'm assuming I've got to finish by 9:30, 25 past? Thank you. I was driving here this morning from beautiful Sutherland Shire and got held up at immigration, but never mind. They couldn't work out why anybody would want to leave the Shire. But while I was driving over, I heard talk about a book that's been written by a rugby league great coach. And the title of the book is called Before You Die, Don't Die With The Music Still In You. So I thought it was a very interesting title for a book. Don't Die With The Music Still In You. You'd have to buy the book or at least read it, I suppose, to find out what he meant. But last Sunday night at church, I was really interested and excited to see a brief video of the Xbox ad. Has anybody seen the champagne ad from Microsoft Xbox? You don't know until I tell you, probably. You may have seen it already. And we watched it on TV at church on Sunday night, and it really interested me. It's a mother and child, childbirth, giving birth to a baby. And when the baby's born, the bed collapses and the baby shoots out like a rocket through the window and takes off like a missile. You seen this ad at all? Anybody seen it? There's a few St. Luke's people here I know. Anybody else seen it? You don't know what I'm talking about. It's a great ad. It's only been released in June. In England, 136 complaints were lodged against the ad on TV and it was withdrawn. But this baby shoots out of the mother, takes off like a missile into the sky, and the picture follows the child, the baby, and the baby begins to grow, and it becomes a small infant, and then it becomes a child, and then it grows, it sort of morphs into a boy, a teenager, a young man, a man, an older man, and then a really old man, and then all the time he's sort of screaming as he travels through the air, and then eventually he homes in like a missile, and there's a graveyard, and you get it getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and he hits the gravestone, pow, and the grave breaks open, the body disappears, and that's it, and there's just dust settles, and then down the bottom of the ad it says, life is short, play more. It's the new Xbox Microsoft ad. They call it champagne. They're giving it the title champagne. I don't know how Microsoft thinks up all these names, but champagne ad. As I said, it was played in the UK. It was withdrawn. 136 complaints. A number from women about to give birth. many women who had given birth said, yep, that's it. You got it just right. That's just exactly what it feels like. But it's a very interesting ad, and it stimulated my thinking because the excellent sermon I heard last Sunday night stimulated me to think about the resurrection. And what was said was true, and I want to say to you, Microsoft made that ad because they don't believe in the resurrection. They don't believe Jesus rose from the dead. If you believe Jesus rose from the dead, the resurrection changes everything about the way you view life and the way you view death. And The Independent Television Commission in England said that the ad was a traumatic. It depicted life as a traumatic experience, and it gave the reminder that life is short, and the final scene is even more shocking because of the grave. And yet, the reality is, when we think about it, those of us who believe in the resurrection will have a different view of life than the one depicted by Microsoft. Life is short. Play more. Isn't that exactly what Paul mimics in 1 Corinthians 15:32? Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Let's play, because life is short. For those of us who are resurrection people, we have a different view about life and about death. Resurrection people, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 20, firstly he says Christ has been raised. He definitely, absolutely has been raised. And he says that Christ, in verse 23, Christ is the first fruits. Not a term that we may use a lot in our day-to-day conversation, particularly if we live in the city. If you come from the country, maybe the concept of first fruits is a bit more familiar to us. But ultimately, the first fruits which tell us that the crop is ripening and it's about to come forth. But Christ is the first fruits, or if you like, the pioneer. The fact that Christ rose means that those who put their trust in him, who are born again, we also then will follow him in the resurrection. So Paul says in verse 20, Christ has been raised. He's the first fruits. Then we will be raised up in the resurrection. And then will come the end. And therefore, he says in verse 58 of 1 Corinthians 15, brothers and sisters, give yourself to the work of the Lord. Therefore, he says, as a result of believing all that, give yourself to the work of the Lord. Let nothing move you. Stand firm. Always give yourselves to the work of the Lord. One of the exciting things for you guys looking at Acts this week is that we have an opportunity in the context of Acts to look at the way in which Christians in that period of time lived with the expectation in their mind that Christ would come in their lifetime. They were expecting him to come back pretty soon. And so therefore that controlled the way they lived. The difficulty for us is that we labour with 2,000 years of seeming inaction between when Christ was raised up and ascended and now. And there's kind of like a lethargy or an atrophy for Christians that after 2,000 years, you and I probably don't live with the imminent expectation that Christ is going to come again. We've also been taught correctly that we ought not to begin to predict exactly when he's going to come back because no one knows but the Father. Well, that's fair enough. But years ago, I heard a great sermon, and the preacher actually said in the sermon, what this particular person had done is put on their bathroom mirror a little sign that said, maybe today. And every day when they got up in the morning and looked into the mirror, they were reminded of the message, maybe today. And the inference was that that was going to control the way they lived that day, because if Christ was coming today, there wasn't a moment to lose. John Singleton said recently on 60 Minutes that he wants to live forever, but he lives each day as if he's going to die tomorrow. He wants to live forever, but he lives each day as if he's only got one day left in his life. So Acts is a cameo of the early church, early Christians, living as if they only had a few days to go, or a few years at most, before Christ was coming again. And Paul says, therefore, as a result of the certainty of the resurrection, give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. And I want to just challenge you this morning to think about what that means, to give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. Peter, the apostle, I'm going to jump to John 21 now. Peter the apostle, just before Jesus ascended and after he had risen, had a conversation with Jesus. And in John 21, we have the conversation. And when it talks about giving yourself fully to the work of the Lord, Jesus asks Peter to do just that. And I want this to be a little bit of a challenge for us this morning. Peter, you remember, had denied Jesus three times. Jesus was then executed. And now he's been raised. They go fishing. They catch a lot of fish. They're having a barbecue on the beach. Jesus pulls Peter aside and says to him, Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Verse 15 of John 21. Do you love me more than these? Peter says, yes, Lord, you know I love you. Jesus says, feed my lambs. Then he says again, Peter, do you truly love me? Peter said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter gets a bit stroppy because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? As if Peter hadn't denied him three times, you know. Just leave that aside for a second, that Jesus would have any reason to doubt Peter's love. Lord, he says, you know all things. You know that I love you. Oh, well, pardon me, you know, because of what happened 3 days ago. I was just a little confused. No, Jesus doesn't say that. That'd be just sinful John Muneer thinking that. Peter says, Lord, you know all things. Jesus says, feed my sheep. But then he goes on, I tell you the truth, when you were young, you dressed yourself, went where you wanted. When you're old, you'll stretch out your hands. Someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate what kind of death Peter would die to glorify God. Now, this is pretty challenging. Jesus is actually telling Peter, I want you to live your life and give yourself fully to the work that I give you. Do you love me? Yes. get on with it, feed, pastor, tend, look after these people for me. But then he says, you're going to die. Do you love me? Get into ministry. It's going to be costly. For you, Peter, it'll mean that you'll give your life for me. And then he says, verse 19, the very end, follow me. And this is the catch, follow me. Peter turned around and saw the other disciple whom Jesus loved. We think it's John. And he says, Lord, what about him? What about him? Does he get the same deal, the same bargain deal, follow you and die? Or is he going to get a better deal than me? And Jesus says, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. And the reality is, when we talk about giving ourselves fully to the work of the Lord, we're talking about following Jesus, not following others who are following Jesus, but following Jesus one-on-one. Following him in a one-on-one relationship, and we don't look to anybody else to determine and define the nature of our discipleship. There's a lot that could be said today, and I'm jumping way fast, about the value of Christian fellowship and Christian peer guidance and all that sort of stuff, and I hope that you are mature enough in your thinking to understand I'm not saying then Christians should never look at anybody else. But the reality is, how Christ is leading me is a matter for me and Christ, according to his word, and what God calls you to, how God leads you in your life, is a matter that you've first and foremost got to determine between Christ and yourself. You must follow him. As someone said once, God doesn't have any grandchildren, he only has children. If you're a child of God, you're a follower of Jesus, follow Jesus. We do it in church, we do it in fellowship, we do it together, we encourage one another, we build one another up. But at the end of the day, I won't be saved because of your faith, as if somehow or other there'll be faith left over and I get the benefit of it. Each one of us, a relationship with God. And for Peter, giving himself fully to the work of the Lord meant that ultimately he would even ultimately have to give up his life for Jesus. So this morning, thinking about missionary service, I got a feeling, I talk around a lot of churches, that when I come as a missionary executive, you know, to talk about missionary service, a lot of people sitting here may well think that what I'm talking about is just marginally less than dying, you know, going and being a missionary, giving up. Like, we all know that being a Christian's a real downer, don't we? I mean, we're against everything, Christians, aren't we? We're against fun, we're against life, we're against enjoying life. You know, we're just a bunch of downers, really. We're just so depressing to be a Christian, isn't it? That's what a lot of people think. But then the real bummer is there's missionary service. I mean, that's got to be the absolute pits. Not only can't you enjoy life for fear that somehow or other the Christian thought police will get a hold of you and say, oh no, you know, don't succumb to the pleasures of life, but then there's missionary service. I mean, it's sort of like having your teeth pulled out with that anesthetic, going off, giving up everything and going and serving God in some other part of the world. Well, the reality is we know that the Christian life's not just all about that. It's interesting that Jesus, whenever he picks heaven, keeps on talking about parties and banquets and lots of fun, doesn't he? Never ending. I mean, if anything, the Xbox ad is really a depiction of heaven. Life eternal, play more. That's really... I might market that. I don't know. Does that work for you? But yeah, heaven, when Jesus describes heaven, he describes a mansion, a 5-star or 6-star hotel, you know, where each of us have our own room, flushing toilet, the whole deal, you know. And then he describes banquets, sort of like 6-star banquets. I mean, heaven is not a place for people who just think that their whole Christian experience has been one long drudge. But being a missionary is really about Christians recognizing we live in the resurrection era. Christ is coming. We will be raised up to be with him. And meanwhile, brothers and sisters, give yourself to the work of the Lord. And the work of the Lord is to walk worthy of the calling to which you've been called, to be Christ's God's sons and daughters, children of the living God, living with the light of the gospel shining forth so that others can catch a vision and can hear about it from us. Giving ourselves to the work of the Lord, the whole of the New Testament can actually expand what that really means. But if in terms of we think of missionary service this morning, what we're really talking about is that some people who are involved in ministry decide that it will be appropriate for them to go and do it cross-culturally. And do it to do it cross-culturally, not just here, but there, wherever there is. It might be in Australia, but it may actually mean catching a plane and lifting off and going to another culture. Mission, generally speaking, is considered to be cross-cultural ministry in another place. A lot of people say, well, you know, isn't missionary service a bit old hat, a bit out of touch nowadays? Do we really need missionaries? Kind of yes, if you conceive of mission as only being a first world to third world transfer of knowledge and civilization, which is what some people think mission is all about. But if you see mission as being Christians mobilizing themselves to take the good news to the world in a whole variety of ways, then you'll understand that there is still a very important place for mission. The way I see it, that we have mission today because there are a number of priorities. The first is that in our world there are millions of people who are unreached. They have never heard the gospel. They've never heard about Jesus Christ. They've never heard his name. They know nothing about what he has done for them on the cross. And so therefore they are, we call them, unreached. But there's another group of people, and I guess you'd call them the newly reached. Remember that Paul in his travels spent a lot of time visiting churches that had already been planted, but they were young and they were just newly reached. And so therefore today there are churches around the world, there are Christian groups that are struggling. They are young and new and they need our support. There are established churches, thirdly, that need our support. Remember that Paul, when he wrote to Romans, the church in Rome was an established church, and yet Paul wanted to go and visit and give them some encouragement. He wanted to actually work in partnership with them. So there's not just the unreached, there's the newly reached, but there's also established churches asking, hey, can you help us? Then, of course, there are specialist ministries. There are places in the world where there are, say, student ministries or other sorts of ministry where Australian Christians can actually make a contribution. And then also there are those places in the world where the gospel's been rejected and where they need to be re-evangelised. There's a sense in which, see, 200 years ago, you might have ticked France or Spain, maybe, 400 or 500 years ago. But the reality is today that there are parts of the world, Europe being one of them, Western Europe, where they need to be re-evangelised for the third or fourth time. And you may well have heard the oft-quoted in CMS statistic that in France there are more registered, licensed occultists than there are ordained ministers. There are more people who are registered in some association of occultists than there are ordained ministers. France is just one country in Western Europe that desperately needs to be re-evangelised. And has been called, even by the Roman Catholic Church, a mission field. So therefore, there are unreached places, there are newly reached Christians, there are established churches asking for support, there are specialist ministries which Australians can make a contribution with, and there are those places where the gospel's been rejected and there's a need to go back there a second or third or fourth time. And so those priorities mean that even today we still want to see people going and working in other parts of the world, sometimes by invitation, churches and others asking for help, and sometimes maybe by our own initiative, saying we think that would be a place where there's a need for the gospel. So this morning I want you to think, to be challenged to think about the importance of mission and what role you're going to play in it. Some will go, many will not go, but will be hopefully committed to it and supportive of it, so that in partnership as a team together, the few who go and the many who remain will all of us, all together, be involved in giving ourselves fully to the work of the Lord, being involved in ministry. One of the things that I've just written a little document, which is down the back on the stage on the far side, and I hope that you'll take a copy of it. What it's got is a number of questions, frequently asked questions about missionary service. One of the questions is, I've always dreaded, or it's not so much a question, it's a bit of a statement, I've always dreaded that maybe God does want me to be a missionary. I'm a bit afraid of the whole thing. And I've written, most missionaries reckon that what they're doing is a magnificent adventure. For them, living in another culture, making friends and working in partnership for the Lord Jesus Christ is an experience that most of us may miss out on. But it's hard work, and it can be dangerous and difficult depending on where a missionary goes. But if it's in obedience to Christ, then whatever the case, there's great blessing. Don't be afraid of the possibility of missionary service. Be afraid of lukewarm half-heartedness. Be afraid of lukewarm half-heartedness. When you today got up, you've come here to this place, did you imagine that maybe Christ will come today? Or maybe next week? Or the week after? Or next year? Or in your lifetime? If I could somehow imagine that Christ would come in the next 30 years, would it change my agenda for how I spend the next 30 years? We're not to actually spend time imagining when Christ will come again. God alone, the Father, knows. But we are to live each day in the light of the resurrection and the knowledge that Christ will come again. And so therefore, how we spend our lives is very relevant. We are to give ourselves to the work of the Lord. And that means, obviously, that we're going to live as responsible citizens in our world, and we're going to pursue careers, and some of us are going to pursue ministry in a full-time way, but all of us are going to be giving ourselves to the work of the Lord. And some will have the opportunity to go and to be cross-cultural ministers in other parts of the world. And for those who get to go, they are the really lucky ones, I reckon. Particularly, as I said, if you go to Southeast Asia and maybe even to Hong Kong. It is hard work, and there are some parts of the world that I've visited to see our missionaries where I've been afraid for my life. I have been deadly afraid. And missionaries in some parts of the world live with real danger every day. It's not true of every missionary, but it's true of some missionaries. There are other places where I visited where the stresses and strains of the work seem to bear down on people. And there's one particular mission area where CMS missionaries are working, where our federal secretary, John Thew, has just come back from visiting. And he said to me, "It seems to me as if every missionary that I visited was on antidepressants." And it's probably true. There are places in the world where Christian workers of every sort, working, engaged in mission, are just about ground down by the circumstances in which they work. And yet, when you go to that particular location I've just spoken of, or when you go to the locations I've spoken of where real physical danger, try and get those people to come home. I mean, we couldn't do it. I don't even think sort of Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, could actually kidnap them and drag them back. You know, some sort of elegant CIA extraction process to get missionaries out of a danger. You couldn't do it. They wouldn't be anywhere else. For them, being where they know God would have them be, doing the work they're doing, is just brilliant. And one of the things I've included in that little sheet that's down the back is just a few cameos of missionaries who've just written to me recently, and I read their stuff. I mean, I sit a lot of the time in the office around a table talking to people, and I read what some of the missionaries are doing. I think, I've got to get back out there again and get into this stuff. This is really exciting stuff. It's relational. It's talking with people and seeing people growing in their Christian faith. So mission may be difficult, it may be dangerous, but it's always exciting, and it's only for the special few. And God alone really knows who those are. But it may well be you. And I want to challenge you today to make ministry your number one priority in your life. Give yourself to the work of the Lord. And ministry in every facet of your life. Be a living agent for the gospel. And then be open in the midst of that experience of living day by day for the possibility that you may give yourself to the work of the Lord in a cross-cultural context in South America, perhaps, Latin America, in Southeast Asia, in Philippines or Cambodia or China or Japan, all those places presently CMS would love to send people to, Pakistan, Nepal, East Africa, Russia, Eastern Europe, Eurasia, and even the Middle East. And there are places, opportunities where we know Christians could go and serve. But let me conclude by really going back to the question that Jesus asks Peter, do you really love me? And if you imagine that Christ is asking you that question this morning, try not to turn your head and look at somebody else when Jesus says, follow me. When Jesus says, follow me, try not to look somewhere else and say, well, what about them? But say to Jesus, yeah, I'll follow you, Lord. I'll go wherever you want me to go in my life. I'll do whatever you want me to do, and no cost will be too great. And if that's true, then I think we as a generation will refute the Microsoft Xbox philosophy that life is short, play more. What we might say is that Christ is coming any moment. Let's give ourselves to the work of the gospel. Thank you.